I'm Evan Dawson, and we're going to move now into our regularly scheduled programming and connections right here on WXXI and WEOS. And we hope that you're joining us from all across Western New York, wherever you are. We're glad to have you every day here. What we're talking about this hour is, you talk about the crisis of COVID-19. The impact on schools is enormous. Obviously, students are dealing with it. Their parents are dealing with it. Teachers are doing their best. And districts that were already struggling in terms of funding and in terms of a fiscal crisis are now trying to figure out what happens next year. For the Rochester City School District, before this crisis, Superintendent Terry Dade was asking New York State for about $35 million. He called it looking for the big yes, looking for the big yes, all the way up through February, asking the governor, asking the state to step in one time and help close down this gap and get this district back on track. And now this crisis happens, and there's a lot of unknowns. But the superintendent has tried to be forward-looking. He was on this program last week. He's talking about a couple hundred more just about teaching cuts. He's talking about cuts to social-emotional support, possible building closures, program cuts, and more. And our guests on the line now are going to help us break down where they see the district's at when it comes to finances, funding, decisions, and more. And let me welcome them now. On the line with us is Beatrice LeBron, a commissioner for the Rochester City School Board. How are you doing, Beatrice?
Kind of hang in there.
I know. You're a commissioner. You're a mom. You got a lot going on.
I got a lot going on. I'm working from home.
You're working from home.
It is very challenging to do online instruction with a 9-year-old and work from home.
I have an 8-year-old. I hear you. I feel it. And I know you're also working for every student in the district. We appreciate the time. Also, hello to Eamon Scanlon, who is education and policy analyst for the Children's Agenda. Eamon, welcome. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Mine's 17 months, so there's no leaving her unattended. So very crazy here as well.
Work, child rearing, all kinds of challenging times. We're going to hear from Willa Powell later this hour. And before we dive in, we've got Willa now. I'm sorry. Hi, Willa. Willa Powell's with us. I'm sorry. I'm looking down at my board.
No,
I didn't see your name. Willa Powell is a commissioner on the Rochester City School Board and with us as well here. Now, before we dive in with our guests who are live with us, I had a chance this morning to speak briefly to the president of the Rochester City School Board, Van White. And what we wanted to talk about was the state of where the budget is now. How big is the hole? And realistically, is it going to get worse or better? This was our conversation. Most of the focus right now is on closing maybe an additional $20 million. How do you see the logical next steps on what's going to happen to close that number, Van?
Well, I hope folks had an opportunity to tune into our meeting a couple of days ago where we sort of essentially had a live brainstorming session with the Board of Education. As you probably observed, the members of the Board of Education came up with a multitude of ideas, some of them what I would call large ticket items, that is the capacity to generate significant sums of money. Others were sort of in the middle category, and there were some that probably wouldn't generate any immediate savings because they required legislative changes and so forth. But for example, large ticket items would include school closures. That does remain a significant possibility, and the layoffs that come with them. Furloughs, depending on the number of hours or weeks or days that are included in the furloughs, we could save significant sums of money there. There are other items that could reduce our deficit further, looking at existing contracts. For example, we have a contract with the City of Rochester Police Department. Those police officers are not in our buildings now, obviously. They are in the streets patrolling our neighborhoods, which is what they should be doing. But actually, we're paying for them. The City School District is paying for that service. We should not be, and we should look at, along with other programmatic and vendors that are supposed to be in our buildings, but no fault of their own, they cannot. Should we be recovering some of that money or putting the money that we would be paying them in escrow as a way to accumulate resources? There was another board member who thought, hey, listen, why don't we just eliminate the SROs altogether? Optimally, I don't know if that's where the whole board is at, but given the circumstances, COVID, the state not coming through with funds, that may be one of the options we have to look for. And then of course, people don't talk about it a lot because it's, it involves discussion of legislation that comes out of Washington. But of course, you, Evan, are familiar with the CARES Act. That was the legislation pushed by Senator Schumer, signed by President Trump,
sure,
which has two elements in it that could generate significant sums of money. These are not cost-saving procedures. These are revenue-generating incomes. One of them is the Governor's Education Emergency Relief Fund. That provides for significant dollars in the millions for districts like Rochester to help with issues and services related to the fallout from COVID-19. And then, of course, this has been debated somewhat in the public, the Education Stabilization Fund. It is being disputed whether the governor has given us credit for, and now listen to me, don't let your eyes just pop open while you, $29.1 million. Let me repeat that, $29.1 million, far in excess of what is the projected gap now because of a lack of state funding. $29.1 million is earmarked for Rochester. It is disputed with respect to whether the governor has given us that money, will give us that money, or is credited us at that amount. If, in fact, it is resolved that we are entitled to $29.1 million, that's a significant sum of money that eliminates that gap. And let me add, this Governor's Education Emergency Relief Fund, it's a misnomer. It's not money from the governor. But what happens is the federal government said, we're going to give money to the states that have been mostly affected by COVID-19. And we're going to give it to the governors. And then the governors can figure out how to spend it in terms of educational costs. That could be colleges, that could be elementary schools or secondary schools. Rochester could be could recover a significant amount of that projected deficit because, of course, as you know, we're projected to eliminate many social workers and counselors who would, of course, be in the prime position, the frontline
okay.
soldiers.
But hold on. But hold on. I got to ask a question here, though, because you,
sure.
You're, as far as I understand it with CARES, you're right. There's going to be some discretion at the state level. Congressman Morelli talked about that on this program last week. But we don't know yet what New York State's going to do about that. And on top of that, my understanding is things could actually go the other way. In other words, if this crisis is even worse than we think in a lot of different ways, economically, with tax revenue, job loss, et cetera, that sometime in April or sometime between May and the end of June or even before the end of the year, the governor could try to, quote, claw back some funding even from school districts because it's an emergency and the money isn't there. And that could further a crisis. So, it, you know, you're talking about the state coming in with a lot of money here when I'm hearing that it could actually even go the other way. What are you hearing?
Well, but here's the thing, Evan. For example, you say I tell you that the governor's emergency education relief fund is available to help deal with issues directly related to COVID-19. Part of that $20 million that you're talking about is $2.4 million in extra lunch costs.
Right.
Food that we provide to kids. That is exactly what the Education Emergency Relief Fund is about. And by the way, I know that statute. I'm a lawyer by trade. That statute says they have 30 days from the date that the president signed the legislation, and then 30 days from the date that the governor gets the money to make decisions. Here's the point. You got businesses right now at banks getting loans. The whole purpose behind the CARES Act was to make sure that citizens, in this case, students and their families and staff have money that is necessary because of the conditions of COVID-19. So this isn't some hypothetical scenario that I'm laying down for you. This money exists. It only requires that responsible citizens, the governor, the superintendent, and the Board of Education, and every congressperson. That's why Senator Schumer did this. So this isn't some hypothetical game I'm playing. These are real numbers, just as real as you, for example, saying, and the superintendent saying, hey, listen, you know what could happen? They could claw back this money. Well, you know, there's this thing called a maintenance of effort provision in that statute, and it says that the state aid can't fall below what they've given local education agencies for the last three consecutive years. So yeah, you can say, oh, they could claw back, but I could say there's legislation that says they don't get that money. The governor doesn't keep that money if he falls below what he's given education for the last three consecutive years. So just as hypothetical as you're saying I'm being about money coming in, I'm telling you that the debts that you're talking about, the clawback provisions, are just as hypothetical. But if you look at that statute, it prevents governors from doing that. It also, on the proactive side, says, listen, if you got emergencies that relate to COVID-19, like you need to hire social workers, like you need to feed kids, that's what that GEERF is for, that emergency relief fund. This isn't hypothetical stuff. This money is real. It's just as real for education as it is for those businesses that are out there getting that money right now as we speak.
All right, so before I let you go then, What do you want your colleagues on the board to do? What do you want the superintendent to do about all this right now?
Well, we did what we agreed to do, which was to have that brainstorming session, along with the governor's emergency education relief fund and the education stabilization fund. You heard a multitude of ideas. The superintendent is given a week. It's not a lot of time, just a week, until the 14th, to look at those ideas, assess them, come back with a recommendation with respect to which one of those ideas are viable. So, for example, he could say, given the short time frame that exists for the governor's education emergency relief fund, we got to get to it. We got to get that $2.4 million that we say we may, and by the way, that's a may, we may have to spend $2.4 million, that $20 million says we have to spend of that $2.4 million in feeding our children. That's what that relief aid is for. So I'm saying to our superintendent, and that's one of the proposals, look at that governor's education emergency relief fund and see if we can use that money to cover the cost of social workers, counselors, and that food fund. How much does that $20 million come down if he deems between now and the 14th that that's a viable source of revenue to help us deal with that gap? Does it come down $2.4 million? Does it come down if you add social workers and the governor approves it? Does it come down $8 million, $9 million? Then we're in the ballpark of getting rid of that deficit. These are very real options. Let me repeat, Evan, just as real as those people that are applying. Billions of dollars have already gone out to business right now. What do you think that Schumer and the president were trying to do with education? The same thing. I don't think that this is pie in the sky. I think we should be working our butts off to get that money just like those businesses, because our kids are as valuable as those business people or any corporate entity that's getting that money right now as we speak.
That's Van White, president of the Rochester City School Board. We appreciate his time. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with Commissioners LeBron and Powell and Eamon Scanlon from the Children's Agenda, and we'll get right to them about where they see the budget, the finances, and what happens next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about the state of the economy during the COVID era. Are you ordering takeout from your favorite restaurant? Are you using Instacart? Is it moral to ask private delivery drivers or restaurant workers to do jobs and put themselves at risk when you don't want to put yourself at risk? Or is it the right thing to do to hire them or get takeout to keep those jobs alive? We'll discuss it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. All right, Commissioner LeBron, I'll start with you. I'll let you respond a little bit if you want to hear from what you just heard from President Van White, and then lay out where you think we need to go next as a budget and a plan is constructed.
So I just want to share, I think Van and I have different views on what happened at the state level with this money that he's talking about. And whether the district pursues it, it would have to be through legal recourse, and that is not an immediate solution. So for me, that number is not a real number at this time as a real viable option to solve the deficit that the additional $20 million to $24 million. And it's super frustrating because I've had these conversations with our board president around this money, and essentially what the governor did was took the $29 that we were slated to get and took it out of the budget that he was going to give us. So he essentially swapped it out. So these conversations, I know that our president is very passionate and feels very strongly that we should pursue it. But again, it doesn't bring an immediate relief or a solution to the current deficit. So I would rather us focus on what we can do now and actually address this additional deficit that we have, in particularly related to the COVID-19 crisis. And I do want to add that the state legislators have given the governor some additional powers with that clawback, where it's a real concern that there are four windows of opportunity that if the state doesn't get the revenues that they anticipated, that they will claw back to the city school district, but also other school districts in the state of New York. So we're not the only ones facing this concern around these clawbacks and what we may potentially get. So I think it's wise that we do put some money in our fund balance. And we had this conversation on Tuesday at the board meeting. So I'll, that's what I'll say in regards to what President White just mentioned.
All right. And then give me your short list then, because we'll dive into it a little bit more detail, but your short list of of maybe where you want to make sure that the district does not cut and where you think you may have to?
I think we may have to close schools, but I also think that there is still an abundance of areas that we can really look at to cut. One of those areas for me is East High School. East High School, even if I, right now, in our budget book, I have to go with what's in our draft budget book. I would say that John Nelms has a different number than what's in the budget book. He presented $20 million, and our budget book, it says 22. So even taking Sean's number at $20 million, I still strongly believe that we should be taking minimally $6 million back. You know, we have no other high school except Edison that even comes close to the amount of money and resources that East High School is getting. And Edison is right now slated to get cut by almost $2 million to $16 million, and they still have 1,700 students, where East only has 1,048 students. So, and no other high school is getting that amount. And so we definitely, for me, I feel like the school board needs to go back to that East contract and reevaluate it in a time of fiscal crisis that we have right now. There were some new proposals for new full-time employees positions that would primarily be at central office. There's about 16 new positions that were created in the budget book for $2.44 million. I've recommended that we not move forward with those. I certainly agree that we need to cut the SRO contract at this time, and I would like us to cut back by at least $1 million. There's a proposal for a new chief position. I'm recommending that we not move forward with that. I recommended that we further reduce chiefs as well. I recommended that we look at capital funds and ask the city to allow us to use those $10 million for the capital fund. But we have $5 million already budgeted that we were going to make an ask for, but over the next two budget years, consolidations and other offices in central office, so the Office of Innovation, currently in our draft budget book took no cuts, no hits, and cuts to the board budget. We have other departments under the school board budget that should be cut, and we can look at that. I'd recommend the furloughs as well, but only in central office, including school board members. And we still, you know, 2 years ago, I wrote in my letter around travel and consultants, and I didn't bring those back up, but we still have not touched travel and consultants. And those are budget areas that absolutely can be cut. And for me, cutting in those areas will allow us to minimize the impact within schools.
All right, let me get Commissioner Willa Powell to weigh in. And I know, given the fact that this half hour is going to fly, I have to ask you to be as tight as you can. Well, I know there's a lot to say here. Go ahead.
Okay, so the 30,000-foot view, we heard the governor talk about how we can't let the potential good news led us into a false sense of security. I believe that we are in one of the most difficult times of many generations. We've got World War II and the Great Depression here, and we're only at the beginning stages. Now, so that means that we have an opportunity to make the coming-of-age experience for young people today meaningful. We have an opportunity to show the young adults today what the greatest generation saw and did, and that is shared sacrifice. And I say all that to say that the school district is going to have to go back to its absolute core mission, the state mandates only, and then look at what's left. If we're going to put even a modest amount into a fund balance, we have to eliminate everything that is not state mandated, and that includes social workers and everybody, everything else that's been considered sacred cows by my colleagues. My son is at School of the Arts, and he's had to hear me have conversations about cutting arts instruction at School of the Arts. We can't, if we want to show our young people what real leadership and sacrifice is, then we don't allow some people to have all of the benefits they've always enjoyed and none of the sacrifice. So in a nutshell, it's across the board. Everything's on the table. That's my message.
Okay. Eamon Scanlon, the Children's Agenda has had a lot to say about what this budget and what this plan may look like and your concerns about who gets impacted, and I'll let you have the floor now. Go ahead.
Yeah, so similar to what Willis said with the 10,000-foot view, this budget is going to be terrible. It's going to be terrible for kids and families, and there's no way around that, and it's really just about minimizing the damage, making sure that the district can really provide the best possible education under the worst circumstances. Our concerns, primarily with what's already been presented, knowing there's more cuts to come, is that the programs on the chopping block, the very first things brought up, are for the most vulnerable students. You're talking about mostly programs that serve kids with disabilities, also programs for kids with really severe mental health needs. The Interim Health Academy is slated to be closed, and the Young Mothers Program, which obviously serves young mothers. So there's a real question of equity here. And knowing that everybody is going to have to sacrifice, there's going to be shared sacrifice. But it can't be done squarely on the backs of the students that need the most support. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's not morally right, and it's simply not equitable. So there are some adjustments that can be made. There are places to save money. Commissioner LeBron brought up the cash capital. That is definitely something the city of Rochester should waive. The SRO program can be eliminated. That's a $1.57 million contract. Mm-hmm. And then looking at all the different central office departments, there are departments that had no cuts in the proposed budget. Some had increases. Some had very marginal cuts. And so if it's a choice between certain central office staff being stretched a little bit more thin and a child getting the legally mandated social work social worker in their building to do psychological counseling, because primarily they serve kids with disabilities, that's got to be the choice. That's got to be the need that's addressed. So I think there's a lot of tough choices that the board and the community has to make, but we have to do our best to make sure that kids still have an adequate education under the worst circumstances.
I'm reading from your positions to restore list. Restore the 31.5 social workers who provide legally required psychological counseling to students. And Willa Powell, was that something that you said probably has to get cut right now, or do you agree with the children's agenda there?
To the extent that they're legally required, that's what we keep. I don't know. I'm not in a position to know what's legally required.
You're a commissioner. You're a board member.
But I'm not a social worker, and I'm not, a special education expert. So,
Okay, Eamon, you're saying that those are legally required according to the children's agenda, yes?
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to social workers within the buildings, they'll tell you that their workload is really focused on providing counseling to kids with disabilities as part of their individualized education plans. They're at the bare minimum. People have this misconception in the community that social workers are often giving counseling to general education kids. That is almost never the case because they are at such low capacity in the Rochester City School District that they're forced to focus only on legally mandated services. And so cutting that department by 25% is going to put the district in legal jeopardy. Similarly, the big cuts to special education, both in teachers and in central office staff, will completely derail the progress that's been made and the goals of the consent decree signed with Empire Justice. So I understand that the district is in a terrible position, but if we're going to talk about bare minimum services and requirements, those are bare minimum requirements, and the district's not doing well right now with those services. So to cut them deeply and to focus your cuts there, that's a recipe for disaster.
Okay. Let me ask Commissioner LeBron if you can basically weigh in on where you see the children's agenda's concerns about social workers, about new mothers, and if you think realistically what the children's agenda wants can be accomplished here.
So I do agree with them on several of their points, except except one, and I will get to that one. Definitely support having social workers. Not only do they provide the social work aspect to special education, but the social emotional to all of our students. And we're also required to provide mental health services now under New York State. So those are a critical piece in our school. And when we talk about students having the ability to have an environment where they can learn, they also need the social emotional support, because a lot of our students are coming from a traumatic background or have experienced trauma. So that emotional support cannot be done by just our educators. We need our social workers to work in schools hand in hand with our educators to provide those services. So 100% agree with that. 100% agree with the special education. Particularly, there was a lot of work that was done around agreeing to the consent decree and the requirements to provide adequate special education services for a student. And I do agree that cuts in special education to the magnitude that the superintendent's proposed budget currently represents will be hugely impactful and will take us back. And part of me feels like we're recycling ideas that we have tried in this district and don't work. And right when we have gotten somewhere a little bit right where we're starting to see progress, here we go. We want to recycle back an old idea that we know does not work in our district. So totally will support the special education aspect of it. It's also in our Distinguished Educators Report, not only special education, but that we have a chief in special education so that we have someone who has the ear of the superintendent at that leadership level to ensure that those services are being provided. So very strong feelings around that. The only issue, and I obviously agree with the SRO. I put that in my recommendation. I said 100,000. I mean, 1 million, and we will still have $500,000 left. And then look at the city to pay for their officers and their benefits. But I do disagree on the bilingual academy aspect of it. And primarily, I, as a Latina, my concern is the equity issue that all of our schools need to be serving our ELL Spanish students, every school, not just a few schools that have ELL models, but every single school needs to be able to support our ELL students. And then that brings me back to Rhea and the conversations around Puerto Ricans, because the Bilingual Academy was driven out of Hurricane Maria and a huge influx of Puerto Rican students. And as a Puerto Rican, I can tell you, we are not refugees. And so the services that Rhea provides with refugee students is vastly needed and vastly different from the services that Puerto Ricans will need when they get here from Puerto Rico. And so those are, you know, that's the only area that I probably will not agree with, but I am strongly supporting equitable supports for all of our Latino students across the entire district, not just a select few schools.
Yeah, I'll let Eamon Scanlon respond to that. And then in a minute here, I want to read a comment from Superintendent Nelms from East, who's listening to the program, who sent a comment there. But go ahead, Eamon.
Yeah, and I understand Commissioner LeBron's reservations. The recommendation was really not our recommendation. This was made over 5 years ago before Hurricane Maria, and a study that was in partnership with Ibero-American Action League about the lack of a newcomer program for students that were Spanish-speaking and internally displaced, and that RIA was created, the Rochester International Academy, specifically for refugees and students that had several years without formal education and were Spanish speakers from not just Puerto Rico, but often Latin America, and had been living in the United States, did not have access to that program. And so having some type of, it's temporary and intensive support program to support those students as they transition then into a regular school setting is a well-researched and important program to have in any school district that serves a high population of those students. But completely eliminating it does not take away the need. And so if every building is set up to have that kind of integration and some type of newcomer program, that would be great. That would just be very expensive. And so it would probably be easier to do some type of integration with the Rochester International Academy.
Let me read a comment from Sean Nelms, the superintendent of East, who is responding to some of what Commissioner LeBron said earlier this hour. Dr. Nelms writes the following, quote, "The board is fully aware that the cost of East is less now than it was 5 years ago. This includes increases in salary, benefits, and contracts. For the upcoming year, we are reducing our budget by nearly 15%. The cuts Commissioner LeBron proposes will recreate the academic environment East experienced 5 years ago, where the graduation rate was trending toward 19%. Morally, that is irresponsible and is reprehensible. Now is not the time to lower our standard for our families. I agree with Commissioner LeBron. There are many places to look before destroying successful programs. End quote. That's from Dr. Nelms at East, Commissioner LeBron.
But unfortunately, that's what we're doing. And we're also doing it at the preservation of East. We already had to have cut successful programs. That's the part of the issue, that we are proposing to further put these cuts on the backs of all of our students except East High School. And again, even if East is cutting by 15%, they're still at $20 million. This is according to his numbers, and I get that he wants to fight for East. That's his job. He should be advocating the way he's advocating for them. But I have a job to advocate for all students and all schools. We have no other high school in our district right now that is the size of East that gets nowhere near. The largest second budget for a high school in our district is Edison. And again, they have 1,700 students and their budget is $16 million. No other school. IAT has more than East. They have 1,077 students. Their budget is $9.2 million. Monroe High School, 928 students. They have $9.043 million. No other high school is getting the amount that East High School is getting. And what we're saying is, if we're talking about equity and making these cuts in an equitable way, they cannot be at the expense of all of our other schools except East High School.
Okay,
I hear what Sean's saying, but I can't do it.
Okay, so I just to be clear, do you expect,
And can I just also mention when 5 years ago, East High School had close to 2,000 students in their building. Their enrollment was almost double than what they have now. So I hear what he's saying, but their budget was much lower. They had a larger enrollment. There was some imbalances there as well, and a whole mirage of reasons, but again, we can still take $6 million from East.
Okay, and so do you think he's correct then that if you do that, things are going to go backwards there inevitably in some way?
I don't agree, and I think that if Monroe can increase their graduation rate and not have the same amount of money and resources and the levels of administrators that are there, then East should be able to maintain the success that they have. This is why I've always said that East is not a model that we can replicate at the cost across the district. And that it was how East was proposed initially as a model. It's not a model that's replicable at the cost and rate. It isn't, not in my opinion.
All right, so let me just squeeze in some listener feedback. Gary says, let's get rid of the expensive sports programs. There's no reason we can't do what most countries do and have intramural versus intramural sports. Cutting social workers while financing football teams is insane. That's from Gary. Willa Powell, I'll start with you. What would you say to Gary?
If arts has to be on the chopping block, then sports has to be on the chopping block. And let me say, at the risk of picking a fight with Commissioner LeBron, and I think that we have a legitimate difference of opinion here, East High has not enjoyed any kind of privilege that so far as I can see. The students that were enrolled in East when it went into receivership are the ones that are benefiting from the U of R contract, and those were not children who were privileged in any way, shape, or form. We've shown that the model works. The difference between East and Monroe is that Monroe did not go into receivership in the sense that they had to that we had to make a commitment either to an EPO or to closing the building, and opening a whole new school. So it's a little bit of comparing apples to oranges in terms of the degree of severity that of the choices that we had to make at the time. having said that, every contract needs to be assessed for its maneuverability here. You know, what contracts can we renegotiate the terms for, and which ones can we not? And I don't know the answer to that, because it's a legal contract with the U of R. It has legal implications for our staffing. And we made staffing commitments and payroll commitments for that. But to answer your email question, yes, sports should be on the table. The problem is that there should be no sacred cows, but I have found that some of my colleagues believe that there should be some sacred cows. And we're not going to reach consensus on that basis.
So let's just briefly have Eamon Scanlon weigh in and Commissioner LeBron. Eamon, briefly on sports. I mean, is this a time to be looking at things like that?
Yeah, and I think that it's, again, these are terrible decisions. Certainly anything that's not legally mandated, keeping the impact at a minimum on kids and sticking with what's working. But in the bigger picture, this really highlights the need for greater state aid and the vulnerabilities of Rochester and a lot of districts because they don't have high tax bases. And it's terrible that the community has to make these decisions. This is a unique and terrible time. But until the state fully funds its own school aid formula, Rochester will be in this cycle of cuts to programs that, frankly, children deserve.
What do you think, Commissioner LeBron?
I agree with what Eamon said, and I do want to just clarify, too. I just have to give this point that East is still in receivership. So we've spent all 5 years at this point and putting out all this money, and the school is still in receivership. Graduation rates are up. Enrollment is down there, too. So, again, we have to look at, and this is why I asked the board to not vote on this contract, primarily until we had some other data in front of us, or they went ahead and moved forward to vote on that contract. So now to say that we may not be able to go back and renegotiate with the contract with the U of R and tying our hands should not be at the expense of all of our children, again, in the rest of our high schools. It should not be at their expense. And regarding sports, I think we need to look at actually doing audits, and I did not vote on a sports contract that just came up, but some of our sports programs are grant funded from the Greater Rochester Health Foundation. And I think that if we look at where we can seek either additional grant funds to support sports and transition out of general funds, that's the direction I would personally prefer to go.
All right. Before we lose the hour here, Eamon Scanlon, where would you direct listeners to kind of learn more about the Children's Agenda's position on this?
Yeah, if you go directly to our website, thechildrensagenda.org, you can find our executive summary of the 2021 budget. And also you can register for our Zoom budget training on Monday, the 13th at 6 p.m.
Once again, the website, thechildrensagenda.org. And Eamon, in our last minute or so here, you've heard the commissioners respond to President Van White's optimism. And I would say he's optimistic that the state's not going to claw back, and that instead we're going to see some of the CARES Act end up in more money for districts like Rochester. Do you share any of that optimism?
Well, no. It's in the school aid runs. The $29 million is an offset, as far as I know, unless something drastically changes. So I don't believe, unless the federal government passes another relief bill, that there will be any additional dollars. So right now we have to assume this is what we're working with.
Listeners, we're going to continue to cover this, and the superintendent, Terry Dade, I'm sure will be back on this program. We continue to invite members of the school board as they try to figure this out. There's a lot of sort of moving parts here, and we'll make sure you're up to speed, because no matter what happens, as our guests have been saying, it's going to be a very rough budget. The question is where the impact's going to be the most. Our thanks to Eamon Scanlon from the Children's Agenda. Thank you, Eamon.
Thanks for having me.
From the Rochester City School Board, Commissioner Willa Powell. Thank you, Willa.
Thank you for having me.
And Beatrice LeBron. Thank you, Beatrice.
Thank you, Evan.
And thanks to Van White, President of the Board, for joining us earlier this hour. More Connections coming up.